Hi, Lynn. Hi, everyone. And happy Monday. Let's see. We're here for the 7 steps to awakening. We're going to continue looking at my journal. And today we're going to be starting with quote number 390. So let me give you a link to 390. How's that sound? Here's the link. If you are listening on the radio and you want to follow along, here's how you find the link. First, go to RDA7, that is the digit 7. The word is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the website, go to Step 2 up on the menu bar, and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 390, because that's where we're beginning today. And what I would like to do first, of course, is take a moment of silence. But goodness, I'm feeling to stick in a CD and do some silence to sound. So why don't we do that? I'm taking out the CD from last night, Lift the Veil, and sticking in another CD. This is called Mist Upon the Lake, and the artist is simply called Gregory. I believe Gregory lives here in Colorado. I found his CD at a metaphysical fair here in Pueblo. I think it was probably last November when I went, but it might have been June. I don't remember. I've only gone to the metaphysical fair once, and that's where I met Gregory and found this music. So this music is he said it's not music because it has no melody. It is sound. And this sound actually plays for 62 minutes and 2 seconds straight. So of course at some point I will just turn it down and then we'll stop. But it's called Mist Upon the Lake, and the purpose of it is for meditation and relaxation. So why don't we just listen to a little bit of Mist Upon the Lake and be still. All right? Thank you. it for now. So we're going to begin then by reading quote number 390, which is coming from the Supreme Yoga in the Seven Steps to Awakening, and this is the quote. Nothing in this world is truly enduring. Again, nothing in this world is truly enduring. That's the quote from the Supreme Yoga. So now what we will do is go to the journal, and I notice Lori just entered the room, so here's a link to the journal. And this is what I wrote in the journal after contemplating that quote. Why put effort into going against a viral habit in order to stay in alertness, especially when there is strong resistance and a touch of fear, imploring that non-alertness is the easy path to happiness? And before I continue, this is referring to that very last long journal entry that we looked at last night, which showed us exactly how the false self is made in non-alertness. That was number 389 in the journal. It showed us that when we are not alert, a thought comes into the mind, and the example that I used last night was a thought, I hate the cold, right? Thought comes into the mind. Because we're not alert to it, we just believe it. And then experience is created from that thought. So I go out in the cold and I shiver and I feel that feeling of disgust that it's now winter. And I believe that I am the one experiencing this. I believe that I am the one that hates the cold. And what happened last night when we were looking at number 389 is I was sharing with you a very deep, deep guided looking that was separating between the illusory self, that in this example hates the cold, and the true self, or the true I, which has no sense at all. So it has no change in it whatsoever. So it certainly does not hate the cold. It has no sense at all. And what I was able to see was that that was the true I, but that in non-alertness, the thought is believed, the experience is designed, and the false I, there's a false me that seems to be having this experience, and that's the illusion. And then what number 389 also said is that non-alertness has become a viral habit, which is why we have such a firm belief that we are these false or imposter or illusory selves. So now 390 is building on that looking. And it asks, why put effort into going against a viral habit? Because it's going to take effort to change a habit that is so deeply ingrained. So why put effort into going against a viral habit in order to stay in alertness? Especially when there is strong resistance and a touch of fear, imploring that non-alertness is the easy path to happiness. And here's the answer. Because non-alertness looks to mind for happiness, and mind is not consistent. Change is the nature of mind, body, world. Therefore, consistent happiness cannot be achieved through mind. Consistent happiness is only achieved through alertness and freedom from mind. So mind does like to fool us into thinking that it can make us happy. I was recently in San Diego with my friend Debbie, and Debbie's mind really tortures her. It really tortures her. And what she was talking to me about was how she needs distractions. She needs distractions to get away from her thinking. Well, that's really ego. That's ego telling Debbie that if you just had distractions, if you would just pour yourself into this activity or that activity, you would be happy. And mind is willing to give Debbie or any of us a temporary break from the obvious suffering of mind. Because if we get these temporary breaks through distractions, whether it's watching a television show or listening to music or being involved in some, you know, hobby or project that we enjoy or hiking, mind is willing to give us temporary happiness through distraction because that gives us enough of a break that we don't let go of mind. It's enough of a break, and mind gets to stay in place. So what spirit needs us to see, if because spirit is there working on behalf of our true desire, which is to awaken to our true self, what spirit wants us to see is that honestly, that happiness that mind promises us and delivers to some degree is never consistent. It's never forever. It's never eternal. It's never final. That happiness is nothing but distraction, temporarily being relieved of the pain so that we get enough of a break that we continue to stay with mind. And we need to see that this happiness that mind gives us through distraction is nothing more than that, nothing more than temporary, that we always return to worries, fears, concerns, struggles. And then we need to ask ourselves, is that what I really, really want? Do I really just want this temporary relief, always returning to the pain of mind? Or am I ready to be done with mind and have consistent happiness? And what this journal entry is saying, what this wisdom is saying, is we'll never get to that consistent happiness through non-alertness. That's non-alertness is the darkness that ego thrives in. The only way we're going to get to that consistent happiness is through alertness. And at first, because non-alertness has become such a viral habit, at first it may seem to take great effort to stay alert and to not fall off into believing mind. But wisdom or spirit is saying it's worth it to go through that effort that it takes to move into alertness and to stay consistently in alertness, because it is alertness that's going to lead us to the consistent happiness that we actually seek. That's the only way our goal will be achieved, if you forgive the words goal and forgive the words achieved. So, number 390 says, why put effort into going against a viral habit in order to stay in alertness, especially when there is strong resistance and a touch of fear, imploring that non-alertness is the easy path to forgiveness? Because non-alertness looks to mind for happiness, and mind is not consistent. Change is the nature of mind-body world. Therefore, consistent happiness cannot be achieved through mind. Consistent happiness is only achieved through alertness and freedom from mind. All right, so we can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 391. Number 391 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is quoting the Supreme Yoga, says, what you see as the world is only an illusory appearance. Again, what you see as the world is only an illusory appearance. All right, let's look at the journal number 391. Do I have any evidence that suggests the world I see is only an illusory experience? I talked a lot last night about how step two, which is really the purpose of step two, is teaching that the world is not real, the body is not real, the universe is not real. But what I feel strongly guided towards also in step two is not to accept that teaching as belief. In fact, it seems to be very heavily emphasized within myself not to accept that teaching as belief, that that is just an intellectual action. And step one was all about letting go of the intellectual action, the believing, the spiritual believing. Step one was all about you cannot do this, meaning you cannot awaken, you cannot know yourself, you cannot know truth through mind. Therefore, any intellectual believing, even though it may be spiritual believing, is still the obstacle of mind. So no obstacle has been removed. The obstacle has just done what it does. It changes. It changes from a more worldly or secular thinking to a more spiritual thinking. But as long as it's still thinking, it's still just mind. So one thing that I've been guided to do throughout step two is to look, a deep, deep inner looking, which is the type of inner looking that I heard Liz Cronkite talk about last night. She called it looking with Holy Spirit, a deep, deep inner looking. And through this inner looking and through seeing for myself, receiving the understanding that is meant to be given through step two, rather than believing. So when 391 says, what you see as the world is only an illusory appearance, I don't want to say, okay, I know that. Because that's purely intellectual. And so instead, what I want to allow is the looking, the deep looking that is being guided. So number 391 says, do I have any evidence that suggests the world I see is only an illusory experience? And when that question rose up, the answer that also arose was yes, there may be evidence. I may have evidence even in my limited experience. First, there was my experience as an apple. Although this experience is only a memory now, the immediate impact of that experience was a realization that the world is not real. And there is an I, but it isn't a person. A good description of the I discovered is present knowing awareness. And probably most of you have heard about my experience as an apple. This is the same people that always call when I'm teaching that I want to talk to. The same ones. I guess if I meant to talk to them one day, they'll call when I'm not teaching. Hold on. Funny, don't you think? Always. All right. So not today. I think many of you are probably aware of my experience as the apple as I look around the room. But I think I also, for those who weren't, I put a little YouTube video, you know, which can be watched later, where I'm describing that experience. It's only a couple minutes long. But I did have the experience one day of kind of my I awareness, whatever I really am, popping into and becoming the apple that my daughter was at that time eating. And what was really interesting about the experience is that the I was still fully present. Of course, there wasn't the word I. There wasn't the thought I, because an apple doesn't have a mind. But even without the word I or the thought I existed. Not at all as a person. Not at all as a person. Not at all with a mind. And then also as the apple, the only thing that I saw, this was still an experience of form, but the only thing that I saw was light, compacted light, which were objects, and more of a spatial light, which was non-object or space. And like it says here, when I came back from that experience, there were two things I would say I learned from it. One is that the world is not real, because the world that I see with different objects, like a glass and a magnifying glass and a microphone and CDs and computer and body, that's not how I saw as an apple. I only saw that way through what I'm going to call a human mind. I didn't see that way with apple perception, whatever the heck apple perception is. I only saw light. And then the other thing I knew is that the real I, the I that I am, the awareness that I am, is not at all human. Because it wasn't like I was an apple thinking like a human, right? The human thinking was not there. I as an apple, I didn't even label myself as an apple. That label happened after I came back to being Regina, back to being human. So kind of by having this different perspective, the perspective of an apple, I saw that none of my perspectives as a human are real. Not even the perspective of who I am. So that is an indication, an experience that I had that does seem to suggest that the world is only an illusory experience. Second, I have had enough insight into other human minds to know we do not experience the exact same world. Twice when I was with Laurent, I received a gift. And the only way that I understand why I received this gift was to help me understand him. But twice when I was with Laurent, I had experiences of seeing the world the way he does. And these experiences were validated by him. When I described for him how I was perceiving the world, he was very touched and said, you know, yes, yes, yes. And the way I experienced the world, which Laurent validated as his way of experiencing the world, was completely different than the way Regina experiences the world. It was almost like we weren't in the same world. Then I also got to know like Danielle's mind pretty well, Debbie's mind pretty well. And I know that their world is different too. So if Regina has a world, and literally Laurent has a different world, even though they seem to be standing next to each other and walking down the same sidewalk, it's a different world. How can we say that the world I see is real? Third, I have seen that the laws of the world as I understood them do not always apply. There may be another law that is higher than the laws of the world. And, you know, I think probably the primary example that taught me this, which I've also shared with you all about multiple times, is when I broke my toe. And then there was a spontaneous healing, and the break was completely healed. The world that Regina knows, you know, things like that don't happen. It's not possible in the world that I believed in. So what that experience did, this healing of the toe, is it caused me to begin to doubt the entire world I believed in. So here are three experiences that I have had. I didn't read them out of a book, right? Three experiences that I have had that do indicate to me that the world is indeed illusory. Therefore, there is cause for reasonable doubt regarding the idea that the world is real. I'm laughing because, of course, you guys, at least some of you know, I was on jury duty last week. You know, and with jury duty, as you know, the law is that the accused is presumed innocent. He's completely innocent. And any burden of proof that he is guilty lies on the prosecuting attorney. And the prosecuting attorney must convince you beyond a reasonable doubt. And the person that we were trying last week, he was charged with a few things. But let me just give you an example of one of the charges. One of the charges was driving at a speed of 120 miles per hour. This was one of the charges against him. And as the prosecutor was examining the witness, which was the cop who pursued him, you know, we heard about how this guy ran a stop sign. The cop was moving in the opposite direction, so he had to, you know, turn around, do a three-point turn. But by the time he got done with that three-point turn, which really, he says, did not take long, this car was already half a mile down the road. And so he, turned on his lights and started pursuing him. At first, the cop says he was going 90 miles an hour. This was a 35-mile-per-hour speed zone. He was going 90 miles per hour, and the car was getting further and further away from him, up to 3/4 of a mile, he estimated. And so then he sped up, and he was going 120 miles per hour, sometimes as much as 125 miles per hour, and he was unable to close the gap. And so when we listen to this, you know, this makes it sound like, yes, he's guilty of traveling speeds of 120 miles per hour, because even at 125, the cop could only maintain distance, the 3/4 mile distance. He could not close the gap. But then the defense attorney got up, and then the defense attorney started asking him questions, and the defense attorney got the cop to admit that there is that he had once previously said in a hearing, and this hearing was brought out, that he had once previously said in another hearing that it is impossible to accurately estimate the speed of a car that is more than half a mile in front of you. And because this cop had once said this in another hearing, and this was a matter of record, this caused reasonable doubt in the minds of enough jurors that in the end we all ended up going that way. This caused reasonable doubt that we could say absolutely certain this car was going 120 miles per hour. Now clearly he was going very, 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 very fast. But the charge was 120, and we had to know that it was 120. And we didn't really know that since he was so far ahead from the cop. We only knew the cop was going 120. Right? Reasonable doubt. All right. Well, let's look at the evidence. What we are being told is we are being told that the world is real. This is the ego. The ego is telling us the world is real. The world is real. The world is real. And spirit is actually the defense attorney here. And spirit is saying, are you sure there's not reasonable doubt about that? Remember your experience as an apple. Remember your experience of seeing the world the way Laurent does, which he validated. Remember your broken toe, which healed spontaneously. Doesn't that cause reasonable doubt? Are you sure you can agree with the ego's claims that the world is real? And I got to tell you, this evidence is just as good or better than the evidence in court last week, which caused us to agree that we had reasonable doubt. So I have to agree that there's reasonable doubt. There is reasonable doubt. If I can be an apple and see a totally different world, I'm not a person for those moments, then is the world and the fact that I'm a person real? How can that be real if I can also be an apple? If Laurent can literally see an entirely different world than I do, even though we're walking side by side down the sidewalk, and he's seeing so drastically different and believing everything he sees, and I'm believing everything I see. Can we really say the world is real? And there's got to be something going on other than a real concrete world if a toe can be broken and then spontaneously healed. There's something else going on here. So there is cause for reasonable doubt. So this isn't just an intellectual accepting of the teaching, the world is not real. This is seen from experience. There is actually very reasonable doubt. It's absolutely, there's stuff here that seems to point in the direction that the world couldn't possibly be real. And I need to investigate this further. So let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 392. Number 392 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is a quote from the Supreme Yoga, says, "The self is real," and this of course is the capital S self. "The self is real. Birth and death are imaginary." Which means of course the little s self is not real, right? "The capital S self is real. Birth and death are imaginary." All right, let's look at number 392 in the journal. "Do I have any evidence that I do not exist?" This is the next question that arose. "Do I have any evidence that I do not exist?" Who questions existence? In order to question existence, existence must be present. Therefore, the question itself is evidence that existence is. Reasonable doubt cannot be raised regarding existence. All right, so what this is really saying, in fact, let me go ahead and finish reading it, and then we'll come back and look at this. All right, so reasonable doubt cannot be raised regarding existence. However, if the question is not investigated any further than this, there may still be an error regarding the identity of existence. I exist, but what am I? As seen through prior inquiry and through the experience of the apple, I am not person, mind, or body. I is, but I am person, mind, or I am body is mistaken identification of I with object. All right, so back to the top then. The question is, do I have any evidence that suggests I do not exist? Who questions existence? You know, this reminds me of, I was watching a movie one time, and I don't remember what movie it was, but it was one of those movies where, it might have even been Ghost. It was one of those movies where somebody dies in a car crash, and then even though they're dead, they kind of rise up above the car crash and they're looking down on their own body. And whoever the character was, when the character was looking down on their own dead body after the car crash, the character said, "I'm dead." And I remember that hit me like a ton of bricks. If you can say, "I'm dead," are you dead? Can something dead say, "I'm dead"? That had to be a perception that that body was my life, and now that body appears dead, therefore I'm dead. It had to be a perception, but not a truth. Well, basically the same thing is going on here. Who questions existence? Who is asking, "Do I exist?" If you can even ask the question, doesn't that mean existence has to be present? I notice you all are having trouble with sound. I'll keep going unless Dove asks me to stop. Let me know if you want me to stop, Dove. And like all of us exit the room or something like that and come back. Okay. So again, who questions existence? If I can ask the question, do I exist, doesn't that mean that something that is what I am has to exist? I mean, how can non-existence question existence? Non-existence cannot question existence. Only existence can question existence. So who questions existence? In order to question existence, existence must be present. Therefore, the question itself is evidence that existence is. Reasonable doubt cannot be raised regarding existence. However, if the question is not investigated any further than this, there may still be an error regarding the identity of existence. I exist, but what am I? That still needs to be asked. What am I? As seen through prior inquiry and through the experience of the apple, I am not person, mind, or body. I is. But I am person, mind, or I am body is mistaken identification of I with object. So there is an I, or an isness, or an awareness, or a presence that absolutely exists, and I am that. But the mistake comes from saying I'm something more specific. So there's no question that I exist. The only question is, what am I? Let's scroll down underneath number 392 and click on number 393. And I just pasted a link in the room to 393. How's the sound? Is it better for you guys now? I noticed Dove recommended pressing the control key to empty out the sound. Okay, good. I'm glad it's better. It's no fun listening when you can't hear. All right, number 393 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. And this quote comes from the Supreme Yoga. I am the unborn in whom the world appearance has vanished. The Supreme Yoga. I am the unborn in whom the world appearance has vanished. All right, let's look at 393 in the journal. I can say, I am that. Whoops, it looks like my microphone just disappeared on my screen. Let me let go and take the mic again. All right, I think I'm back now. I did vanish. I vanished. Hopefully you guys have me back now. I see myself as back, but I did see that disappearing act. All right, 393. I can say I am that which is not dependent on world appearance for existence. I can choose alertness and focus attention on I. I can stay with attention on I, silent, present, knowing awareness, even though I itself cannot be seen. So let me just explain this journal entry to you. We started by reading a quote from the Supreme Yoga, which said, and I'm trusting with absolute confidence and knowing, I am the unborn in whom the world appearance has vanished. I, right now, in my present state of seeing, can maybe say something like that on faith, based on intellectual learning that I've read from these books. But there's not a sense that I would be honestly describing my perception if I said that now. Like I'd be lying a little bit. That's funny because I wouldn't be lying a little bit. That's the absolute truth about all of us. I am the unborn in whom the world appearance has vanished. That's our truth. But it doesn't describe my perception. It doesn't describe what seems true to me now. So as I contemplated this, I wanted to see how far in the direction of this statement I could honestly go based on my current state of mind. And the statements I found that I could make were these. I can say I am that which is not dependent on world appearance for existence. Something in me, I'm going to have to call it something intuitive, it's not intellectual. Something in me intuitive knows that. And it's because of that knowing that when things seem to, quote, go wrong or, go differently from the way Regina would perceive she needs it, this is why I still am at peace. There's no panic that happens. Because somehow I know that even though Regina may think she needs this or that, I actually know that's not true. There's a knowing here. It's not a knowing I can describe, but it's an intuitive knowing that all is well, that I am okay, that I am unaffected by anything in the world or anything that happens in this life we call Regina. So based on that intuitiveness that actually seems to be somewhat conscious in me now, I can say that I am that which is not dependent on world appearance for existence. Somehow I do know that. I can choose alertness and focus attention on I. This is something I can do. This is something I do when I remember. When the noticing comes into my mind that I'm being non-alert, that I've got caught up in another thinking daydream again, when that noticing appears, what I do is I, in that moment, choose to be alert and to focus my attention back on I, back on the heart, back on awareness. So I can also say I can choose alertness and focus attention on I. I can stay with attention on I, silent, present, knowing awareness, even though I itself cannot be seen. Now this, for me, I'm going to call a stretch. I remember back in my professional world, we used to have to set annual goals in order to get our annual bonus. So in January, we would sit down with our boss and we would set some annual goals. And then based on whether we achieved those goals or not, we would or would not get a bonus at the end of the year. And one of the things that was really emphasized was that we had to set some stretch goals. We weren't allowed to just set goals that we easily knew we would accomplish, because they said anything that we easily knew we would accomplish, that was actually covered by our salary. A bonus shows that you went over and above. This was their philosophy. And so we had to set stretch goals. And of course, presumably through these stretch goals and through achieving these stretch goals every year, you would become a better and better employee, and the company would become a better and better company, always improving. Well, I wasn't thinking about that when I did number 393. There wasn't any thinking going on, I need to set a stretch goal here. But as I'm reading it now, what I notice is that's how I was also guided by Spirit. I was guided to, the first two statements here are currently true. They feel very honest for me with my current perception. I can say I am that which is not dependent on world appearance for existence. Something in me knows that. I can choose alertness and focus attention on I. That is something I do regularly throughout the day. But this third one is a stretch goal. This third one is trying to take my present scene or my present state of mind and stretch it further towards the Supreme Yoga's scene that is stated in 393. And the stretch goal that was written is I can stay with attention on I, instead of going back to the daydreams multiple times a day, and right? I can stay with attention on I, silent, present, knowing awareness, even though I itself cannot be seen. And that is the stretch goal. And it feels very current. It feels like a very honest, current goal. It has not been, quote, achieved yet. But it doesn't feel like just something I wrote down that day and I forgot. It feels alive in me as a goal or as a purpose. All right, Jamie wants outside. One moment. All right, so let's scroll down underneath 393 and click on number 394. All right, number 394, I'll start by reading in the Seven Steps to Awakening, quoting the Supreme Yoga. It is only in the eyes of the ignorant that even your form exists. So he could be talking to any one of us as we perceive ourselves now. It is only in the eyes of the ignorant that even your form exists. All right. Reading 394 in the journal. Blind ignorance is believing what is perceived and experienced without questioning the perception or experience. The more perceptions and experiences are questioned, the more it is seen that blind ignorance is believing what is perceived and experienced without questioning it. So, you know, we've all done this. We've all just believed what we see, believed what we experience. And then somewhere along the line, we began to learn to question that. You know, like I remember for me, the very first questioning that seemed to arise, I believed, because I seemed to experience it. At that time, I would have told you I did experience it, because I totally believed it, right? I believed that Jasmine did not respect me. You guys have heard this story before, too. She didn't respect me. She didn't care about me or my wishes, right? And I believed that. And I experienced the rage and the anger of that belief. But that was the very first belief that Holy Spirit led me to begin to question and to look at. And through a process that I was guided through, a story I don't feel to retell right now, but through a process of looking at that, seeing that was really only my belief, and then, you know, letting go of my thoughts, what came to happen, the end of the story is, I came to see, oh my God, I was so wrong. That's just absolutely not true. And it never has been true. And the behaviors that I used to interpret as disrespect, I came to see were just natural behaviors for someone of that age. Even now, any you know, she acts like a 15-year-old sometimes. Oh well, she's 15. Every 15-year-old acts that way. All 6-year-olds act like 6-year-olds. All 10-year-olds act like 10-year-olds. All 2-year-olds act like 2-year-olds. It was a very natural maturing process that I was witnessing and calling it something else. So somewhere along the line, we started learning to question our thoughts. And for me, what happened is I began to let Holy Spirit guide me in the questioning my thoughts as I began to drop significant beliefs that ruled or caused a large number of my perceptions in the way I saw the world. So letting go of the belief that she didn't respect me was a big one in my home life. Letting go of the belief in betrayal was a big one in my entire life. Letting go of the belief in rejection. Letting go of the belief that another person could use me. You know, it seemed like in the beginning, the first few years, there were beliefs that caused me a significant amount of suffering. And one by one, these beliefs came up to be questioned and finally seen to be untrue. And when they were untrue, a whole bundle of suffering disappeared, never to return. The belief in hate, letting go of the belief in hate was another one. But then what happened after a significant number of these beliefs were healed was I came to see clearly that it's all thinking, for lack of a better word, because the Holy Spirit does come in through thought. Realization sometimes comes in that way that is like a thought. But still, all thinking, all non-realized thinking is ignorant. All of it. Even the thinking that says, this is a microphone that I'm speaking into. That whole sentence is actually ignorant. This is a microphone that I'm speaking into is ignorance. Now, I still experience that. I still perceive that. But I accept, based on the experiences that I've had of dropping beliefs and seeing how perception drastically change, I accept that the only reason I perceive the way I do is because not enough questioning has occurred to really crack this nut called perception entirely, to completely crack it entirely. I'm still just blindly believing too much of my experience. Let's see, I notice Lori has a question here. Do you see a difference between belief and projection, or does it boil down to the ego projecting and we decide to believe it rather than ignore it as ego crap? I think at this point, it doesn't matter. You know, this goes back to the single quiet thought that I received in 2006, I think it was, that said, I think, what I think I see What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And then that loop just keeps going. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see. And now we're somewhere in the middle of that loop to where it doesn't even really matter what comes first anymore. And if I was to answer the question, you know, I would say what came first was the thinking, what the Course calls the tiny mad idea. But now it doesn't really matter which comes first anymore. Every time I believe my experience, I'm still continuing that loop. And every time I'm daydreaming and thinking up some story, I'm still in that loop. So what matters is that I'm in that loop. Hold on, Jamie wants back in, and then we'll continue. You're very dirty. Go lay down somewhere where it doesn't matter that you're dirty. I'll clean you up later. You're very dirty. Are you happy? She's very dirty, but she looks so proud of herself. So proud of herself. She was out there rolling and rolling and rolling. Okay. Yeah, go lay down. All right. So number 394. Bye, Barb. Says, blind ignorance is believing what is perceived and experienced without questioning the perception or the experience. And the more perceptions and experiences are questioned, the more it is seen that blind ignorance is believing what is perceived and experienced without questioning it. So as we get a little bit of experience questioning our thoughts and seeing that some of our thoughts, our beliefs aren't true, and then reaping the rewards of dropping a whole bundle of suffering, like the belief in rejection or the belief in hate, then we get on a roll. Like Jamie was rolling in the dry grass. Yes, then we get on a roll and we start being willing to do more and more and more questioning, because we learn again from our own experience that not questioning is ignorance, and that wisdom comes through questioning. And of course, this is something that, like Byron Katie, you know, she's the queen of teaching this to people, helping them see that they need to question their thoughts, and that when they question their thoughts well, they'll see that there was never any truth to that thought or belief at all, that it was completely made up. Let's scroll on down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 395. Number 395 says, this cosmic illusion leads the unwary mind into endless difficulties. All right, I'm going to go to the dictionary. Every now and then I like to look up a word, and this is one of those times. I'm going to look up unwary, because I'm not 100% sure I'm clear on what an unwary mind is. It's you. Unwary. And according to dictionary.com, it means lacking caution or not vigilant. That's an unwary, W-A-R-Y, mind. Lacking caution or not vigilant. So this cosmic illusion leads the unwary mind into endless difficulties. All right, let's go to number 395 in the journal. The material universe and its possibilities are infinite, like a dream is infinite. Therefore, the opportunities for suffering are endless for the non-alert, non-questioning mind. To me, this is a pretty important point. And, you know, since doing this contemplation, since then I've began also reading The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, also published by Michael Langford, same guy that does the Seven Steps to Awakening. And one thing that he emphasizes in one of his chapters is how the mind can come up with trillions of combinations of thoughts to keep us completely deluded. It can just go on and 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 on for as long as we're willing to tolerate it. There's enough there, enough possibilities, even though it's not true. Enough stories, enough situations, enough problems, enough fears, enough desires. Yeah, Lynn is saying the Son of God is infinitely creative. So what this really means is that we have to, if we want to be free, we have to make the choice to be alert. Because if we stay in non-alertness, this is just going to go on and on and on and on. And, you know, based on what some of the teachers say, now this is not something I feel that I know from direct experience. In fact, I don't even recall Spirit really ever even talking to me about it. But based on what a lot of teachers say, there is this unreal experience called reincarnation. And that can also go on and on and on and on. You know, I have the privilege of being Regina Akers in this lifetime. And the reason I say the privilege is because, you know, I had good parents, good family life. I've always had enough money. I've had a healthy body, healthy, smart child. No real tragedies have befallen me in this lifetime. It's easy to kind of sit back and be happy in this life. But if I'm not willing to use this opportunity that I have as Regina Akers, Regina Dawn Akers, to wake up, who's to say that my next life will be so golden? In my next life, I could be born in some country with a lot of civil war, very little food. I could be way too focused on just day-to-day survival to think about spirituality or waking up. I believe it was Robert Adams that used to make this point to people. You know, if you've got this good life now, I mean, by good life, I mean opportunity. You're not worried about eating. You've got, if anything, you're worried about how not to eat so damn much, right? You're not worried about eating. You know, if we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, those lower level needs, they're taken care of in this lifetime. So take advantage of it to go for what Maslow called self-actualization, which we would call self-realization. Take advantage of this good life, because the next life in this infinite possibilities could be different. You know, you might not be delaying yourself one lifetime. You might be delaying yourself a number of lifetimes, because the dream has so many possibilities to it. Now, this is not something I know as a fact. Like I said, Spirit has never said this to me. I've never received this from within. But I've read it, and I thought that's worth listening to, because the real message there is, why not use now? And that seems like a worthwhile message. Why not use now to move into alertness, right? Why put it off? So the material universe and its possibilities are infinite, like a dream is infinite. Therefore, the opportunities for suffering are endless for the non-alert, non-questioning mind. So is that what we want? That endless opportunities for suffering, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Probably every one of us in this room are pretty lucky compared to some other lives on this planet. Maybe we should just take advantage of this, quote, good life, you know, in America, with an abundance of food, to work towards self-realization, huh? Let's take advantage of now. Why put it off? All right, let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 396. Dove is saying, A Course in Miracles says that a miracle can save you 1,000 years, and then he's estimating, you know, based on 100 years per lifetime, that's about 10 lifetimes. All right, number 396 in the 7 Steps to Awakening, still quoting the Supreme Yoga, says, When one is firmly established in self-knowledge, which is infinite, unlimited, and unconditioned, then the delusion or ignorance that gave rise to the world appearance comes to an end. When one is firmly established in self-knowledge, which is infinite, unlimited, and unconditioned, then the delusion or ignorance that gave rise to world appearance comes to an end. All right, let's look at the journal. If the material universe and its possibilities are infinite, what distinguishes the material universe from God or reality? Right, because we describe God as infinite. Well, if the dream can go on and on and on and on and on and on and on with infinite possibilities, right? How is the dream different from God? That's the question. And I think that probably, to be honest, one reason this question raised up in my mind is I was in a Facebook group at the time where the infinites of the universe, how infinite the universe is, meaning space, how space goes on and on and on, was being used to prove that God is infinite, which is almost a little backwards, it seems like. But this person was proving that God is infinite. God has to be infinite because the universe is infinite. And we know that. Supposedly we know that. Supposedly there's not a place somewhere where a line is drawn and the universe stops, right? And he was really almost making it sound like God's definition was dependent on the world or the universe's definition. That's why I say it's backwards. But that maybe is what part of that reading, that discussion, maybe is what led to this question coming up. If the material universe and its possibilities are infinite, what distinguishes the material universe from God or reality? And again, the reason this question would come up is because I could state that my belief, based on A Course in Miracles and NTI and the Advaita Vedanta reading that I've done, my belief is that what God is, what we call God, what God is, has no relationship to the universe at all. So the infiniteness of the universe does not prove that God is infinite, right? But I guess what I must have realized somehow intuitively is that that was, again, a belief. I read in A Course in Miracles or somewhere that there is no relationship between God and the world, that the world is an unreal dream and that God is real, so there's no true relationship there. And therefore, how infinite the universe is would not prove anything about God. And I guess that somewhere along the line, I realized that's an unquestioned belief. Yeah, I love the way, I'm sorry, I know your name, but I'm totally having a blank. That's just because my mind does not always work. Diana! Thank you. I love the way Diana has worded it. Truth is not derived from illusion. And I'm in agreement with that. But I realized I was in agreement with that at the belief level. And I realized all beliefs need to be questioned, even spiritual beliefs. For me to read something and agree with it at an intellectual belief level, that's not awakening. So I said, okay, let's look at this. Let's look. I'm willing to look at everything, even my spiritual beliefs. So if the material universe and its possibilities are infinite, what distinguishes the material universe from God or reality? And this is what came from the looking. The material universe is dependent on non-alertness for its apparent existence, just as a dream is dependent on sleep. The mechanics that produce the effect are active only in non-alertness. In the light of knowing, the effects are non-existent. They cannot be in knowledge. Anything that cannot be in the light of knowledge also cannot be reality. Now, this is a good answer, and it came from looking. This wasn't just being dictated. You know, NTI was dictated to me. This experience of this journal is different. I'm not listening to a Holy Spirit like a scribe. You know, when NTI came, I was like a scribe, and I heard an inner dictation, and I copied it down on paper. Sometimes I would see with some kind of a scene what was being said. But for the most part, that was not true. I was just writing it down, and I had to go back and study it and go back and practice it. But what's happening with the seven steps for me is very different. I'm not a scribe. I'm no longer a scribe. That's over for me. This writing is coming about still fairly automatically, but as a result of and in conjunction with very deep looking seeing. So everything that we see in this, this isn't something for me to go back and study later and hopefully eventually one day realize. This is what we would call live realization. It's happening now. So when I ask this question, if the material universe and its possibilities are infinite, what distinguishes that from God, right? It became very clear to me that the main difference is that the appearance of the infinite universe only comes through non-alertness. And that as soon as we become alert, the effects of non-alertness disappear. And again, I already knew this from my own experience because I've seen the effects of non-alert beliefs like she doesn't respect me, the belief in rejection, the belief in betrayal, the belief in hate. I've seen for myself that when those beliefs were seriously questioned and risen up to the light, they were seen to be untrue, and then there was no more perception of them anywhere. So even though that's a limited experience, I can already see my world changing, the way I view the world changing, what I see happening in the world changing, based on the fact that I let go of a handful of beliefs. So that says to me that there's something very real here, that the world I see only exists because of my non-alertness. And that the alertness comes from Holy Spirit or God or wisdom. And that in the alertness, in God, the illusion does not exist. That's the difference. Because one only exists in non-alertness, and the other one is the light. And in the light, the illusion does not exist. So the material universe is dependent on non-alertness for its apparent existence, just as a dream is dependent on sleep. The mechanics that produce the effect are active only in non-alertness. In the light of knowing, the effects are non-existent. They cannot be in knowledge. Anything that cannot be in the light of knowledge also cannot be reality. And so it has nothing to do with the size of the illusion. How infinite it appears does not make it real, right? It has to do with the fact that it can only exist in darkness or non-alertness. That's what makes it not real. So let's click on number 397. This may well be our last one. I notice we're down to 12 minutes. We'll see what happens, though. Maybe it's short and easy. Number 397 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, quoting the Supreme Yoga, says, "The sun and the worlds become non-objects of perception to them who have gone beyond the realm of objective perception and knowledge." The sun and the worlds become non-objects of perception to them who have gone beyond the realm of objective perception and knowledge. All right, let's look at the journal. Oh, it is a short one. Maybe we'll do a couple more. Number 397. Oh, Diana's saying, take your time, no rush. But actually, I'm hungry and I have to pee, so I'll be happy when the 1 o'clock hour hits and I can... Go take care of the body's crying for attention. So I won't be going any longer than I need to. Number 397. Just as a perception vanishes when one realizes the error of the perception, the objective material universe vanishes for one beyond the petty influence of mind. So this is something that I just talked about in number 396, that I, from my own experience, already know that when you do not believe in rejection, you really do not perceive rejection anywhere. When you do not believe the thought, she doesn't respect me, you don't see a little girl not respecting you. You see it differently. So I already know that When a perception is questioned and raised up to the light and seen to be not true, it literally does not exist for you anymore. And so I can understand to some degree, based on that experience, that if there is no more listening to mind, there literally is no more world. You know, my experience is a small sample of how things disappear when you quit believing in them, truly quit believing in them. But I do know that things disappear when you quit believing in them. So if you quit believing in mind, it follows that there would be no world. Just as perception vanishes when one realizes the error of the perception, the objective material universe vanishes for one beyond the petty influence of mind. All right, let's scroll down. We'll do another one. Click on number 398. Number 398 says, and this is in the book, "The ignorant man does not realize the unreality of the objects because he has not realized the reality." The ignorant man does not realize the unreality of the objects because he has not realized the reality. All right, let's look at number 398 in the journal. "The non-alert, non-questioning mind believes its perceptions and experiences. Belief continues the apparent effect. So there is no cessation of perceptions and experiences. To the non-alert, non-questioning mind, this apparent ongoingness is mistaken for reality." And that is what we experience. You know, what appears to be the difference between what we call a dream, the nighttime experience while we're sleeping, and what we call reality, is that the dream is very brief. You know, we have it in a night, part of a night, begins and ends somewhere in that nighttime. But we go to sleep and we keep waking up to this one, to this life. We go to sleep, we wake up, we go to sleep, we wake up, we go to sleep, we wake up, and it's still there. Every day, every day, every day. Our family is still our family. Our problems are still our problems. Our dreams are still our dreams, meaning our desires, what we hope will happen in our lifetime. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. And so because of that seeming continuance, we mistake it for reality. That's our proof that it's real. The fact that it just keeps going on, it keeps happening. This says, again, number 398, the non-alert, non-questioning mind believes its perceptions and experiences. But then there's the important part. Belief continues the apparent effect. This again goes back to what I mentioned earlier in response to Lori's question. What I think, I see. And in this case, see means perceive. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think about, right? What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. Do you see how that just keeps continuing? It's the continuation of that loop that allows the dream to continue. But because of the continuation of that loop, because of the ongoingness, we mistake it for reality because it doesn't stop like a nighttime dream stops. It keeps going. But it keeps going because we keep participating in the loop, and the loop doesn't have a natural exit point. We just have to quit participating in the loop. Otherwise, the loop can go on and 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 on. You know, it doesn't have an end. It doesn't have an end. The non-alert, non-questioning mind believes its perceptions and experiences. Belief continues the apparent effect. So there is no cessation of perceptions and experiences. To the non-alert, non-questioning mind, this apparent ongoingness is mistaken for reality. However, the alert mind distinguishes between the apparent ongoingness of change, changing perceptions and experiences, and the true ongoingness of ever-present here-ness, is-ness, or being-ness. So what this is saying is to the, again, to the ignorant, the continuation of the loop seems like reality. But this is saying to those who are really willing to awaken from the loop and begin to question their beliefs and their perceptions and begin to listen to wisdom, what we call Holy Spirit, and begin to practice being alert, right? One thing that wisdom points out to us is the difference between the apparent ongoingness and true ongoingness. Because the life, everything is always changing. Even the body, it ages. Everything is always changing. So it's not really ongoingness. It's a constant shift and change. There's nothing ongoing. It was only an apparent ongoingness. And then what wisdom does is it focuses our attention on the self, the I, which is ongoing without change, which is constant. And discernment begins to notice the difference between apparent ongoingness, which is really just constant change, and true ongoingness. which has no change to it. The last paragraph of 398. Awareness of ever-present here-ness focuses intuitive knowing on reality. With intuitive knowing focused on reality, apparent reality loses its importance. Through loss of importance, belief and involvement are weakened, and realization of constancy rises to replace the perception of ongoing change. So again, the ongoing, the apparent ongoingness was coming from the loop, right? What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And the reason that loop seems to continue is because we're very, very involved in our thinking and our perceiving and our experiencing. But as we begin to shift our attention to the true ongoingness, the constantness, we lose interest in the perceptions and the experiences and the thoughts. Because we see the difference between what is real and what is not real, what is constant and what constantly changes. And as we begin to lose interest, that loop begins to slow and weaken. Because we're not fully involved anymore. And yeah, Lori is saying this consistency is clear in watching awareness. Always there, always the same, so different than what my mind thinks is reality. And this is one of the advantages of the practice, awareness, watching awareness. Because you get to know the difference. You see it, you taste it, you touch it. The difference between what is real and what is not real. Between what is true and what is insanity. And you start losing interest in insanity, ignorance, illusion. Funny how they all start with I. All right, that's it. I'm done for today. I get to go eat and go to the bathroom now. So you guys have fun listening to Diana. And I will see you on Thursday at 4 Eastern Time with Lynn for A Course in Miracles Original Edition. Bye.